We know that in these last days of the church year, we always reflect on the end of time, the final judgment, the great sorting out process that the scriptures describe. And even though we know this is part of the good news, it still takes effort for us to ponder it because it sounds like a lot of bad news at the same time. A lot of upheaval, a lot of losses, destruction. So it's hard for us to immediately grasp that the end, which we look forward to, is actually good. Today's first reading is another passage from the book of Revelation. It uses the images of the harvest of the wheat and the gathering in of the grapes. This is usually interpreted as the gathering in of the wheat as the gathering in of the just. The gathering of the grapes is the punishment due to the wicked. Again, it's an image of judgment, an end, a conclusion of the process. And we say, well, it's great if you're wheat and you're gathered into the barn. It's terrible if you're a grape and you get squashed in the great wine press of God's fury. And something in us says, well, wouldn't it be better if those grapes would not get squashed? Wouldn't it be better? And it goes back to that troubling thing. It's so troubling to us that there's such a thing as punishment, eternal punishment. But if there were not such a possibility, then it would remove justice from the equation. It would remove meaning from life. If it doesn't matter what anyone does, if the victims of injustice, of the children who are abused, if the, you know, the people who are killed or victims of human trafficking, if they're gathered into the same banquet as the rapists and the corrupt politicians and the evil people of the world, it doesn't make any difference. That would be worse than the possibility of somebody suffering forever. It would be a worse hell if there was no meaning to our life. And it doesn't matter what we do or what's done to us. It's all meaningless. That would be worse. At least people in hell have this. They're witnesses to justice. They can say, they don't like it, but they say, this is not unjust. They can't lie about that. So that's something to think about. But this is still this heavy business, this whole reflection on the end times. And now Jesus, in today's gospel, speaks about some images of the end or some of the elements of the transition process from where we are now to where we will go. And the first thing he says is that the temple is going to be torn down, not one stone left on another stone, which to the Jews meant the end of their whole identity as a people. End of their worship, end of their religion, end of their culture, end of their community. That was like the worst possible thing you could imagine. I'm trying to think of a modern equivalent of that. The only thing I can come up with is the talk that you hear sometimes when people talk about earthquakes, and they say, well, there's a big fault line that goes through Marikina, the Marikina fault line, and they say, eventually, there will be a big earthquake, the big one. It will be 8.5, 9.0, something like that, and the whole of Metro Manila will be destroyed by the big one. And that's what people say. In California, they say the same thing because California is built on a major fault line, San Andreas Fault, and they say, eventually, maybe it will be 500 years, maybe it will be today, there'll be a massive earthquake and there will be just unimaginable destruction. Well, that's something like what Jesus is saying here when he says the temple is going to be torn down. And so naturally they say, wait a minute, when is this going to happen? What sign is there? How can we prepare? And then he says, well, there's lots of signs. Just don't be deceived by them and don't be terrified by them. There's going to be all sorts of upheaval in the meantime. Wars, insurrections, nation against nation. There's going to be earthquakes and famines and plagues. And we know that is true, even in our own times. Now, this sort of language in the gospel is going to continue, I think, for another 2 or 3 days as Jesus talks about the end times. And in the middle of this very heavy language about destruction comes this saint, today's saint, Cecilia. Cecilia, the famous virgin martyr of the early church, a young woman who clung to Christ and suffered terribly for it. She was forced into a marriage, then she was tortured for being a Christian, then when they tried to execute her, it failed. She was hacked, but she didn't die. She lay in agony for 3 days, according to the tradition, until she finally died. And they say, well, that's one horrible story. That's like destruction of the temple. It's like wars and insurrections. It's like famines, plagues, and earthquakes. It's like the throwing of a grape into a wine press. And what's that all about? And then, emerging from the tradition of this early virgin martyr comes her song of praise to God. She emerges as the patron saint of sacred music because, well, of course, some of the traditions are that she sang her praises to God as she was dying, that in her heart she could continue to praise God even though she was being martyred. And that's a very striking thing to reflect on, that someone could praise God even when she is dying, that she could see beyond the suffering of this moment to the joyful future. And that's what faith does. It inserts into the middle of a decaying, collapsing situation, and a note of hope and joy. Saint Cecilia, she tells us at the end of the year, because her feast day always comes at the end of the church year, she tells us to sing the new song, the song that is not sung in this life, or is only glimpsed or only faintly heard in this life, but in the next life, everyone sings it. We had that vision yesterday, yesterday's first reading. John had this vision of the 144,000, and they were singing what seemed to be a new hymn, a new song before the throne, before the four living creatures and the elders. No one could learn this hymn except the 144,000 who had been ransomed. So there's a new song that we can only sing in its fullness when we get to heaven. But even here, we can start to learn the melody and we can start to sing it, even while we're suffering. Now, as I was reflecting on this, this insertion of a beautiful song into a scene of destruction and seeming desolation, hopelessness, what came to my mind was a scene from that great movie, Shawshank Redemption. I think I've used this example, maybe I've used it many times, but I'm gonna use it again because it fits how Saint Cecilia sheds light on these passages about the end of time. Anyway, the scene from the movie, I don't know if you know the movie, it's a prison movie. It's a very heavy prison movie. There's lots of injustice, there's lots of foul language, there's lots of violence, there's people being killed, there's people being taken advantage of, people being raped in prison and all. I mean, it's really one heavy, dark movie. And in the center of the movie, there's a friendship between two of the prisoners. That's one of the beautiful things, friendship, that they actually find some kind of camaraderie in there. There's a group of friends. And one of the main characters clings to hope. We don't know why or how he does it, but he has this idea that things will get better. The scene that comes to mind is when this hope-filled character, and I can't even remember his name, but anyway, he comes upon a record, you know, a vinyl disc, that's what music used to be played on records, and he breaks into the, I don't know, the PA system of the prison, and he plays this record for all the prisoners to hear, and it's a beautiful Italian opera. And in the movie, all the prisoners are in this gray, dusty, dark, prison yard, like they're all dressed in gray and they're standing in the ashes. And I mean, they're in a hopeless condition. And all of a sudden, over the PA system comes this beautiful singing of these Italian women, and they stand there with their mouths open, just in awe of this beauty. And then I had to look up this quote, because the other character, of this friendship, not the one who played the record, but his friend, this is what he says: "I have no idea to this day what those two Italian ladies were singing about. Truth is, I don't want to know. Some things are best left unsaid. I'd like to think they were singing about something so beautiful it can't be expressed in words and makes your heart ache because of it. I tell you, those voices soared higher and farther than anybody in a gray place dares to dream. It was like some beautiful bird flapped into our drab little cage and made those walls dissolve away. And for the briefest of moments, every last man in Shawshank felt free." It's a very moving scene in the movie. And it, I think, is a great Christian message. It's not a Christian movie. I don't know if there's any faith mentioned in the movie, but the idea that we can transcend the sufferings of this moment, and we can sing something that can't even be captured in words, that there's something so beautiful that we can't even dream of the concept of it. That hope sustains us as we journey through this valley of tears. So that's Saint Cecilia singing as she's dying. That's all the martyrs. In fact, that's every Christian. We are invited to sing the new song that we will sing in its fullness on the other side of death.